Hey, friends, and welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and if you've been friends with me for some time, you know that I have a special place in my heart for running. It's definitely something I have a love-hate relationship with. It has been a love in many seasons of my life, but it's also been disordered in some seasons of my life. So I'm super excited for you to listen to today's episode talking about how running and sports nutrition and sports performance can intersect with intuitive eating. Today, I interviewed Serena Marie. She's a registered dietitian and double RCA running coach who helps female runners stop fearing food, stop body shaming while learning to fuel their best performance ever. Serena is a runner herself and has run 4 Boston qualifiers and countless half marathons. With nutritional sciences degrees from Cornell University and Yale University, Serena decided to focus on sports nutrition after realizing how radically performance improves with nutrient timing and adequate fueling. Serena blends sports nutrition with intuitive eating practices to help female athletes make peace with their diet and their bodies so that they can fuel with confidence instead of fear or confusion. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Serena, happy Friday. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Katie, for having me. I am so excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. Running is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. So I'm so excited to chat with you about this. But first, tell us about yourself. What is your story with food and with fitness?
Yeah. So I am a registered dietitian, kind of specializing in intuitive eating and working with runners. And I completely and totally arrived at this point in my career because of my history with running and food. So I started running when I was really young, like 13 years old, because I wanted to lose weight. And wow. Yeah, 13. Yeah, man. And, you know, really kind of had a really disordered relationship with running and exercise and food for a good, you know, 10, 12 years before I really kind of found sports nutrition, and then sports nutrition kind of levied into intuitive eating and got me where I am today. But, you know, the good thing is I started running at a young age. So I have lots of running experience. I'm now a running coach as well. I'm really invested in my career choice, but definitely arrived here because of lots of years of restricting my food and using exercise to compensate for quote unquote overeating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like so many people can relate to that. I mean, that's part of my story as well. I think for me, it was more so after college when I wasn't necessarily as active. I talked about this on the last podcast interview. We said it this kind of jokingly, it's like in people's 20s when they graduate, that's often like, now I'm going to run a 5K. Like we have that desire for that competitive edge. So tell us a little bit more about your story and how running, you know, how have you seen it maybe in yourself or in your clients turn from this friendly competition into this obsession?
Yeah. So I think a lot of runners do start running to lose weight. So I know that was my intro to running. But even in, you know, adults, or I think what you just said was super perceptive, is a lot of kids and college athletes are now graduating, going into the workforce, they're more sedentary. And, you know, what's a really accessible sport for them? It's signing up for the first 5K. So they go into 5Ks or into running with this, you know, idea of they want to lose weight. And I think for some people, there's this allure that it works really well because they go from being sedentary to now running, and they have this initial weight loss that then kind of stalls. Or for some people, maybe they don't get that immediate weight loss from the running activity. And it just becomes this like chase to just get into a smaller and smaller body, or to use exercise simply just to get smaller. And then I think there's now another layer to that where if you do get pretty like competitive, whether with yourself or with others, running definitely is one of those like aesthetic sports where people believe that they need to have this really lean, like plank-like body in order to be fast and fit. And so now this kind of gets amplified by they want to lose weight and that's why they came to running, but now maybe they want to lose even more weight so that they can quote unquote get faster. And I see that's where the like you stop falling in love with the sport and appreciating what your body can do, and you just become obsessed with like shrinking or the number on the scale or the time on your running watch, and everything becomes about numbers, and that really can escalate quite quickly.
Yeah. So numbers driven. Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to that. You mentioned that at the young age of 13 is you had this desire for weight loss. Tell us mm-hmm. more about that.
Yeah. You know, it's so I'm 32 now. So when I look at like a 13-year-old, it's like a baby.
Don't you just want to like give your old self a hug? Like
I feel, So I was teased when I was in middle school for having like a pot belly, quote unquote, and I'm just using the language that the little kids used to use to tease me. So then I became very self-conscious about my appearance, and I think I was literally on like askjeeves.com or whatever the old Google was. Oh my gosh,
you just took me back. I haven't heard of that in a minute.
Yeah, like whatever before Google was invented.
I heard this on the radio the other day, Cha-Cha. I was like, I've totally forgot about Cha-Cha. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. You just like would click and it would go somewhere, right?
Yeah. I don't know. That's so funny. Okay. I digress.
So, you know, I found out, oh, if you start running, you'll lose weight. And so I remember like taking my Discman and like holding it in my hand and going for like a run around the block. And I actually really liked it. And then I joined the cross country team in high school and I started making like all these new friends and I really liked it. But then I got that competitive bug where like the girls that were faster than me were much thinner than me. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of spiraled into I was barely eating at all. At one point, kind of like female triad athlete syndrome came into play with like losing my period, like the whole shebang just from kind of getting picked on at a young age. Mm-hmm.
Can you just inform our listeners, kind of give a little bit more detail about what the female athlete triad is and how that showed up for you?
Yeah.
How old were you when you experienced that?
I was a sophomore in high school. So I think you're like 14 or 15 at that point. So basically that's when you are stressing your body to the point or losing so much weight, which is quite a stress on the body, that it disrupts your HPA axis, which is like your hypothalamus in your brain, your pituitary gland, and your adrenals. And what this leads to is like a dysregulation of your sex hormones. And it can put somebody or a female, it can put a female at risk for like bone fractures or like shin splints, et cetera, but also amenorrhea. So losing your period because you were restricting or you lost so much weight. So I lost my, you know, I had like just gotten my period and then I lost it again. Because I managed to lose so much weight so quickly. And I also was using exercise to like compensate. So I remember one time sitting in front of the TV and eating like a whole big thing of raisins. And because I must have been starving. Mm-hmm. And then going on this really long run afterwards and having all these GI issues. But like, you know, really kind of in the height of like every time I ate something, I had to exercise to kind of compensate for it.
Yeah. And the irony of that too, and I see this with runners, is that you are burning such a high amount of energy. So you're hungrier, right? But it does take a toll on people mentally of, well, I ate so much, but there's almost this disconnect of the why. So how were you able to kind of pull yourself out of that obsession? How did your, you know, career evolve in to become a dietitian, to move into intuitive eating?
Yeah. So, you know, that competitive bug kind of stayed with me. And I definitely had like phases. I've been running for so long now that I've definitely had phases where I've run less and run more. But eventually when I was like in my mid-20s and kind of, again, trying to aim for like a personal record, so to run a race at my fastest time, I started getting really into sports nutrition. So just kind of reading all about nutrient timing. So when to have carbs before a workout and after a workout and when to have protein, and started really kind of getting into timing my carbs correctly. Now, I think this was now a new obsession and not yet healthy, but it did give me permission to start eating more food. And when I kind of realized like, hey, carbs actually are helping my performance and also helping me not to get those binge-like episodes I was just describing with the raisins, you know, I kind of had that all through my teenage years and my younger 20s. I started adding in carbs and that, you know, that kind of went away. And then one day I can't remember why I bought intuitive eating. Like
nobody knows their intuitive eating story. Just come to that conclusion. No dietitian or people. It's like, I don't know. I don't even know how I came about. It's the universe.
Well, I don't know if you have this problem, but I'm so guilty of just like someone recommends a book and I put it in my Amazon cart and I just buy it. And I have like millions of Amazon books. So like, it was one of those, right? Where like somehow, somewhere, somebody mentioned this book and I'm like, oh
you should listen. Sure.
Yeah. And so I bought the book, and this was kind of right after I came back from a trip to Paris where I had eaten lots of like croissants and chocolate and had been actually feeling really good in my body. And then I came home and read Intuitive Eating, and I was like, whoa, when I was in Paris, I was eating intuitively. I was really relaxed and happy and just eating food when I was hungry. And it was just like the perfect like sequence of events where I was like, I totally believe in this. And I mean, I definitely had the struggle of like intuitive eating, but trying to lose weight, you know, that whole like when you're first discovering it. But this was years ago at this point. So now I'm definitely all in on intuitive eating and really help runners realize that, you know, weight loss isn't really what we're looking for when we want to feel better in our body. And when we really want to like hone in on performance, we really want to optimize self-care and nutrient time in and giving our body permission to get the fuel that, like you said, runners really need.
Yeah. And I want to come back to that intuitive eating with performance goals. But before we go there, how is it that the diet talk and kind of that culture of the running community, can you explain to us what that culture often looks like for many people and how it can be harmful when it almost appears helpful in disguise?
Yeah. So I think the diet talk gets disguised because when people start to sign up for races and they're training for events, and you know, something that always happens was I jokingly call it the runger. So your appetite is spiked because you're running all these miles and maybe you're even doing now intense, you know, hill workouts and speed workouts. And I think people become very afraid of their appetite. And because
it changes too. It's so different if you've never ran or at that, you know, intensity. It's so different from what someone might be used to. That's a great point.
It's so different. And I hear all the time, I'm addicted to sugar. I'm addicted to sugar. I have the worst sugar cravings. This is like one of the most common complaints I get from runners. And, you know, they literally feel like out of control around the bagels on Saturday morning or like the donuts or the kids' leftover ice cream or whatever. And I think simply what happens now is we're in this culture where thinness and leanness to increase speed is kind of idolized. And then at the same time, you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, well, I'm hungry all the time and eating is not going to contribute to this thin physique that I see all those pro runners on TV having. And so we kind of start to get obsessed with this idea of, I need to start controlling my appetite so that I can look more like those pro runners that I see on TV. And, you know, not really realizing all the other stuff that goes into being a strong athlete and just thinking that the solution here is restricting food. So I think it's like disguised in this way where you think you're helping your athletic performance. You think you're doing the thing that the pro athletes are doing because you're trying to replicate their body type, but you're actually setting yourself up for so much chaos and potential injury.
Yeah. Yeah, talk to us a little bit more about the potential injury and what maybe you see as common, especially in runners, in terms of nutrition.
Yeah. So I think the most common injuries would be things like shin splints or like fractures, because when kind of similar to what we were just talking about with the female athlete triad syndrome, is basically as you are restricting, your hormones are being compromised because you are restricting fuel for your body that is working quite hard for you. And this is actually compromising like estrogen in our body, which actually can compromise our ability to have strong, healthy bones. So that's a really common injury. But then also things like anemia, like low energy, like feeling really fatigued and exhausted because you're not getting enough of the right nutrients to have, you know, healthy red blood cells. or maybe just you feel exhausted because you're not getting enough fuel because you're running all these miles and then you're also restricting. So those are probably the most common, and losing your period. Maybe that's not seen as an injury, but that's definitely an indicator that your body is not robustly healthy if it's no longer able to support having a child when you're in an age where you should be menstruating.
Yeah, that's such, I think those are such big aha moments or maybe red flags for somebody listening who has experienced shin splints that won't heal or something that's going on in the body that isn't healing or just you don't feel right. Which, you know, you made me think of how, you know, when people start getting more competitive, talk to us a little bit about how those nutrient needs change and how that can lead to maybe this mental challenge as well. Like, so I'm thinking, for example, you know, when I started training for my first marathon, and this was probably when I was still a little bit in that disordered mindset. It was, yeah, I could not keep up with my eating. And you read books in sports nutrition about this runner's weight gain. Tell us about that and how that can be a mental challenge.
Yeah. So I think the runner's weight gain is kind of a product of this thinking you're addicted to sugar and thinking you're, you know, you're so hungry, you need to have this control. So, you know, as you and I who work in intuitive eating, we know that when you kind of suppress your appetite and say no to your body when it's telling you you're hungry, eventually biology wins out. So, you know, I think low carb diets are extremely popular in the running community because everyone believes you eat a carb and you become quote unquote fat. But actually, when you look at the macronutrient needs of an athlete or a runner, you need more carbs and protein, like period, non-negotiable. You need that. And if you don't eat them, your body is very smart. And that's when those sugar cravings come in, the ice cream with all the extra carbohydrate in it. And, you know, the cravings for the potato chips, like these cravings, your body's being quite intentional in them. It's like, hey, you didn't refeed me after our long run on Saturday. So guess what? Yeah, you're going to feel out of control around ice cream and potato chips Sunday night when you're hanging out at home. And so I think this runner weight gain, I don't want people to be afraid of it. I want you to realize that it's actually a product of ignoring your hunger. And it's when your body gets so ravenous because you haven't done a good enough job of really honoring the increased hunger, which is really your body telling you you need more protein and carbohydrate. And that's where that comes from.
That's such good information. I want to bust this myth because I feel like somebody listening is going to come back on Instagram and be like, but what about... Tell us about like keto or high fat for athletes, because you see, I think it's a little bit controversial. You see, oh yes, your body can use fat and running. Have you seen that come up and what's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So fat adapted running is like,
yes, thank you.
Everyone's number one. Science,
the more scientific word for it.
That's okay. I mean, so that's what they term it. So, I mean, can it be done? Yes, it can be done. And I would say to you, if you wanted to, I'm not advocating this, but if you wanted to be like a really low carb runner, usually you generally have to supplement salt and magnesium because you're not getting enough of those nutrients from an array of food in your diet, and your sweat tends to blend towards being heavier and sweating those nutrients out. So I usually always start there. I'm like, this diet is like, you have to supplement, like, you must supplement these things because it's like not natural. And obviously I'm biased against it, but that's usually one of the first things
you and
I
both say. A little disclaimer if you can't tell. Yeah.
So that, but then I think the bigger thing is I think, and this is not based on any science here, this is just like my personal experience working with people, is most people, if they try and go low carb and fuel their running performance, they're, instead of being successful with it, they're going to be in that binge restrict cycle where they're going to be like, oh my God, for a whole week, I was really low carb and I lost all this water weight. And then they're going to binge eat the raisins or the ice cream or the potato chips. And then they're going to hate themselves. And then the cycle continues. So, you know, I think there are those people that maybe can genetically handle this low carb lifestyle, but I think a lot of people, they can't. It's going to kind of trigger the restriction and then the binging. And then the other thing here is that if you are an athlete who's concerned with performance, which, you know, for me, that means just competing against myself, I'm not trying to go to the Olympics. Carbohydrate fueled training is pretty like indisputed in the scientific literature that that is the better choice if you're competitive. So yes, maybe you can fuel endurance performance in a fat adapted way, but if you want to run it as fast as your body is physically able to, then you need carbohydrate.
Yeah, you bring up such a good point. It's like, you can, and I think listeners could apply this to so many different things. You can, it's possible, but should you? Is it doing more harm than good? Is it creating more stress in your life? Always ask yourself that question.
Yeah, that's a great question to bring up because like your quality of life is also important.
Yeah. So I think this is a great segue. You know, is it possible to practice intuitive eating and performance goals? I get this question all the time. So I really want to unpack like, what does that look like and how can that evolve?
Yes, absolutely. So, and I think that's kind of one of the main reasons that people will work with me is that we really are focusing on their performance and intuitive eating. So one of the first things that we do is we break up with dieting, we look at food rules, and we make peace with food. So really just kind of some of the traditional intuitive eating processes of making sure that you're not restricting accidentally, you're learning what hunger feels like and how to fill yourself up. And then as we kind of make peace with food, it's now becomes much easier to practice nutrient timing. So nutrient timing is really the sports nutrition component where we are going to be thinking about our pre-workout snacks. So what are we eating before our run to help increase speed? What are we eating after our run to help facilitate recovery? What is your hydration like? What is your mid-workout fueling like? What is your overall calorie? We're not counting calories, but your overall intake look like to make sure you're getting enough on a daily basis. And when you are consistent with your training, I always say stress plus rest equals growth. So when you have the training of, you know, that stressful training plan and you're doing the hard work.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but stress. Yeah. Tell us like what that means, like stressful training. Yeah. I think that has a negative connotation. I know what you mean, but I know somebody listening doesn't know what you mean.
Yes. No, thank you. I'm not saying that because you've now learned nutrient timing, you can just sit on the couch and then, you know, eat your pre-workout snack and go run a PR or a personal record. So when I say stress, I just mean that you're appropriately stressing your body to train for performance. So the appropriate stress load for a half marathon training plan might have like a track workout, a tempo run, and a long run, and then some of those easy like junk or cross training miles. So that's what I mean by stress is the training load basically. But I think runners get really invested in the training load. They're like signing up for all of the running coaches and all of the training plans. And they're comparing themselves to like their friends on Strava and trying to beat their friends' times. But then when we get to the rest part of the equation, which is the days off and the refueling your body and all of the self-care that has to go into helping your body recover from all of that stressful training, that's where runners get negligent. And that's kind of part of what intuitive eating is not only is it about refueling and feeling safe enough to refuel, but it's also about having that awareness that self-care and days off and sleeping is also a big part in fueling your performance, but also just feeling best in your body.
Yeah. I think it too, it sets people up for success when they transition out of sport or season, right? Which we don't think about that.
Hey, if this episode has you feeling some type of way, especially with the spring, warmer weather, and you're feeling so inclined to run your first race, be sure to check out my Fierce Female's Guide to Running Your Very First or Best Half Marathon. You can find the link in the show notes or go to katiehake.com/shop and find the Fierce Female's Guide to Running Your First Half Marathon. All right, back to the show.
You know, when we talk about performance goals, what are some of the performance goals that your clients have? Like, what does that actually look like? Is it time? Is it speed? I mean, how does that show up?
I think the most common ones I see are time, like trying to run a faster pace than the race before. And then the other one is probably distance. So like if you're running your first marathon or first ultra marathon, I get a lot of those first timers also in my program because fueling for a marathon or an ultra marathon, I mean, talk about needing to eat, like you need to eat.
it's another beast. I mean, I study this stuff, but I still remember like when I first marathon, it was just like mind blowing about, because I had run multiple half marathons, but then when I got to that full marathon, I was like, I can't keep up. And I'm a dietitian, and this, it's really overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So for anybody listening, if you've had this negative experience, like when I first started training for my marathon, I was getting so sick all the time. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the common challenges? We talked about under eating, but what are some of those big challenges that people run into, especially when they try to do this on their own?
So GI distress is a huge one. So like the runner trots or gut rot. So basically I hear all the time, well, I can't eat before I go running because my stomach gets sick, and just
I'm
kind of using
crap my pants.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So to speak. So they use that as an excuse to do all this fasted cardio. And that's something I struggled with, like really bad gut rot for years. So it takes time and patience in figuring out a plan for you and training your gut. So your gut, actually, the more we practice running on a fueled belly, your body starts to express more of the like enzymes, which I like to think of as like little scissors that cut apart your food for you. So your body starts to express more of these enzymes, so you can digest a little bit better when you're running. But it also is things like knowing what kinds of foods are going to be best tolerated in your belly before you head out there. So gut rot is a huge one. And then I think the other one, you know, it kind of goes along with underfueling, but this feeling of I'm addicted to sugar and I feel crazy around food and I'm binge eating and I don't want to anymore. I think that's like another super common pitfall of all this training.
Yeah. How to get in the amount of food that your body needs without it feeling chaotic or like this just ravenous all the time. I can't keep up because I'm addicted. That feels like addiction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, we're all for fueling yourself when you're hungry, but it's super annoying to be hungry every hour on the hour. So just kind of understanding which foods are not only going to honor our cravings, but at the same time, set us up so that we stay fuller longer. So kind of marrying those two principles so that people don't feel like they're constantly starving to death.
Yeah. I just love this conversation because I think it sends such an important message for listeners too, that's one of the really cool things about intuitive eating, is that when you can really embrace it, you can be such a better athlete because you can look at nutrition information and education and what your body's telling you just as that. It's information, it's data for you. So I'm curious too, do you ever use or do you see a place for tools like tracking your macros, looking at numbers? How does that tie in with performance and intuitive eating?
So we don't track macros, but we do talk, I guess, loosely about macros. So what I mean by this is after we've made peace with food, and I think every athlete's journey looks a little different, we kind of talk about what does getting 20 to 30 grams of protein look like at a meal. So it's not getting your food scale out. There's nothing like necessary that you have to hit the exact number, but hey, like, what does that look like on your plate? What does that look like for you if you're a vegan or a vegetarian athlete? And we talk a lot about, I call it the carb sweet spot. So just kind of trying to figure out, hey, the last time I had, you know, about a cup of oats on my plate, you know, I really felt pretty hungry soon after. So maybe next time I should add an extra banana to that, like get a little extra carbohydrate. So just kind of this awareness of how different quantities of food affect your hunger and your appetite or your performance if it's pre-workout. So it's not like measuring necessarily, but just kind of awareness of like how different quantities feel in your belly and feel in your body, because your comfort after you're done eating is also important information for us to examine. So that's kind of the extent of our macro, quote unquote, tracking experience.
Yeah. No, I love that though, because that's such a testament too. There's this belief that, you know, you have to be really aware, and awareness means you're tracking everything and writing things down. But if you're somebody who gets, you know, with intuitive eating, we want to get away from the restriction, away from the numbers, because it often can be triggering, but recognizing that you can look at portions in a neutral way, and the more in tune you are with your body, the easier that is for you to make those adjustments that don't have to be rigid and can still line up with your goals. I just love that.
Thank you. Yeah, I always remind my athletes that it's self-care, right? Mm. Because if you're not paying attention and you're just like throwing something back and have no idea what you just ate, then you can't examine later on if you're like, oh, dang it, Serena, I'm hungry an hour later. Why is this happening? You know, I have to be like, well, why is it happening? What did you eat there? Mm-hmm. So we really just, we don't look at it obsessively. If it stresses you out, we figure out a way to make it not so stressful. It's all your self-care hat. How can I make my body not feel constantly starving and also optimize performance? It's a self-care strategy.
Yeah. And I love that you said too, that it's individual. That plan or that strategizing or how you look at it can be and should be different for everybody. So what tips do you have for someone who wants to train for a major race, but they also have this history of an unhealthy relationship with food?
Okay.
Then correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I would imagine that you get a lot of clients who see, oh, you're a running coach. Like, great. You're going to help me. And like we see a lot with intuitive eating starting out, I'm not dieting, but there's still this dieting. How do you approach that? And tell us more about that.
Yeah. So again, I think I always try and get like buy-in. So I'll say, okay, you're not dieting. You're not afraid of carbs, but I've noticed, you know, you're hardly eating carbs at this meal, or especially like those nutrient timing related ones. So those pre and post workout, I think that's like a really golden opportunity to get the buy-in for how powerful more food can make us feel. So generally I'll have an athlete start with like their pre-workout or their post-workout meal and modifying it so it either has more carbs or more protein, depending on the person and which meal it is. And usually there's like a pretty quick response of, oh my God, I feel so much fuller. This is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, see, that's because you do need more of, you know, whatever. You need to eat more. And then it's kind of like, okay, like there's something to this, like sports nutrition and
intuitive eating. I think she knows what she's talking about. Okay, I think I believe her now. Yeah.
So usually I get the buy-in from, you know, that's the nice thing about being a sports nutrition specific intuitive eating counselor, is that I can kind of modify or manipulate those meals and get that buy-in.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. I love that. Mm-hmm. So with somebody then who has that history of disorder eating or an unhealthy relationship with food, let's say they want to take it to the next level, right? Let's say they've only done half marathons, or they've done marathons and they're ready to go to ultra marathons. What tips would you have for somebody who is transitioning there?
So I do think it can be a quite like nerve-wracking or scary experience. So I think if you can surround yourself with either, you know, like-minded athletes who are also eating intuitively and not talking about dieting, or get the help of a sports dietitian, I think that's really helpful. But if you are somebody who wasn't ready for that step, I always tell people go slowly, right? Because it's scary. So maybe you actually need a lot more carbohydrate, but the idea of me telling you to eat like another whole cup of cereal might freak you out. I say, okay, can we just add like a quarter of a cup of extra carb to each of your meals and just kind of slowly go up from there? And that's just a way to kind of give yourself some grace as you kind of figure out, like, again, kind of getting that buy-in where you probably are going to have this experience of like, holy moly, I already feel a little bit better. So I think going slowly and having compassion is really important. And I think if you can get any kind of intuitive eating resources, whether it's following people on social media or buying the intuitive eating book, I think that really helps you to give yourself that permission to trust your body when it tells you that you're hungry, rather than you creating this drama where you're like, oh my God, my body is addicted to sugar, and trying to fight it.
Yes. Less drama.
Mm-hmm. Less drama.
That's such a great, I love that you bring up the point too about your circle, because when you set such a big goal like that, it becomes a lot of your time, your focus, your energy. So making sure, what is the stuff that you're putting in your head, and that affects us and impacts us so much more than we recognize sometimes.
100%.
Well, this has been such an informative conversation. I mean, I think, gosh, we could talk forever about so many aspects of this, and there's so many nuances with intuitive eating and sports nutrition. So where can our listeners find you and learn more and tell us? I know you have a program as well. So tell us a little bit more about your program and what that looks like working with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So you guys can find me on Instagram. I'm obsessed with Instagram. So at Serena Marie RD, lots of like sports nutrition, body positive, and intuitive eating related content there. And that's a good place also to just shoot me a DM if you wanted to chat more. But my website is serenamarierd.com. And I do work in the virtual space. So I see clients both one-on-one, but I really, I love group experiences. I think it's really powerful to have a bunch of female athletes start at the beginning of a 3-month journey with restriction and binging and under eating, and then be graduating and celebrating how they're feeling powerful and PRing. So my Food Freedom for Female Athletes group coaching program has a very special place in my heart. And that's a small group coaching program where we just kind of talk about intuitive eating and sports nutrition in a 3-month journey together.
I love that too. And, you know, for listeners, sometimes if you are the one who's taking an intuitive approach as an athlete, you know, whether I use that word athlete, like I think so many people are athletes. We don't always label ourselves that, but recognize like you're not alone. And it is, you know, we are biased, but if it's the right pull for you, if it feels like the right thing to do, ignore what other people are telling you, go with your gut. And I love that you have created that community because I think it's so crucial to the success along this journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like we were saying, what's in your mind and who you're surrounded with really is going to impact the choices you make. So for them to be surrounded by one another, it's a really powerful, special experience. And it's something I wish I had had when I was 22 years old.
Right. Have you heard of Girls on the Run?
No, I have not.
Oh my goodness. You have to look them up. I'm sure they're in New York. Okay. It's a club, but it's a running club for young girls. And yeah. And so I don't know. That's who when I ran my first marathon, I ran for charity for them because I just fell in love with that organization and recognizing that running can be such a powerful, empowering sport. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you know, like your story, you could be so influenced at such a young age. So yeah, check them out. They're such a great
group. I definitely will. Yeah.
I hope I see all those young girls like joining your running group and being so inspired.
That would make me so happy.
So let's finish up this episode, this awesome conversation with a little bit of a rapid fire.
Okay.
A few questions for you. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite podcast or book right now?
The Vanishing Half by, I'm not sure if it's Britt Benet or Britt Bennett, but it is absolutely fabulous.
Ooh, what's it about?
So it's about these twin sisters and they're born in this community where it's all people who are of African American descent, but they've been trying to create their skin color to be as white as possible. And the two twins kind of go off on separate journeys where one becomes like a white person, so to speak, and one stays in her Black community and just their journey. And it's really beautiful and it's insanely addictive. I gifted a copy to my fiance's mom. I was like, you have to read this. It's so good. So it's really good. Highly recommend.
That sounds really interesting. Also, congratulations on your pandemic engagement. I just got married in April. So
congratulations on your pandemic wedding.
All the wedding planning Corona brides out there, for sure.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm going to need it.
Sweet or salty?
Definitely sweet.
What do you want less of in 2021?
I want less anxiety. I have very negative self-talk and that's like the thing that has got to go this year.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And what do you want more of in 2021 other than positive self-talk?
I want more organization. So I'm also trying to start this year with all of my goals and the plan on how I'm going to achieve those goals. So organization.
Organization. Man, I need more of that too. And lastly, I love to ask this question to my guests. What is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
So this is a super simple pleasure moment, but the second you asked this, it popped into my head. It was like a long run. The weather was like perfectly chilly. I was along the water listening to an audiobook and I just was like having this like life is good moment. And that's definitely the best thing that happened to me this week.
I love it. We need more of that. We need more of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So good.
So well, good.
Thank you so much, Serena, for joining us today. I think our listeners are going to get so much value from this and hopefully feel inspired to, you know, don't be afraid to set those performance goals and get a little bit more competitive. But you can do it in a way that feels right and is not triggering for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Katie. It was like a joy to talk to you and such an amazing conversation. This is my favorite thing to talk about.
I love it. Thanks, Serena.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.